This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Nick Whalen. He's Jeff Erickson. We're here with you from rotowire.com, hanging out for the next hour, talking World Cup, talking the Open with our friend Len Hochberg. We're going to have Patrick Maher from Mad Dog Sports Radio on VSiN stopping by for his thoughts on England, Argentina, and maybe which team Spain should prefer to face in the World Cup final. We'll talk a little NBA Summer League. We'll talk some NFL divisional odds. That's what we do here on Prop Points. We try to hit as much as we can over the next 60 minutes. Before we talk a little World Cup, a little MLB All-Star Game, make sure if you are not subscribed, if you're not downloading the Prop Points podcast, do that. You can find it on Apple. You can find it on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. You can find Prop Points in all VSiN programming in podcast form, as well as on the VSiN Watch app if you are a VSiN subscriber. All right, Jeff, we have one finalist set for the World Cup. That is Spain taking down France 2-0 yesterday. It ended up being, you know, a pretty dominant effort from Spain. A little bit of a disappointing effort, I think, from France. You know, Spain gets on the board with a penalty kick early in the game. They score again just after half, and it never really felt like France was all that close to making a run. I mean, didn't really have too many quality scoring opportunities until very late in the game. So was this more of an impressive effort by Spain or more of a disappointment to you from France?
I think it was a command performance by Spain. I think it's both. I mean, I think France was disappointing as well. They had a key injury right before halftime that didn't help with on their back line. But I once Spain got the initial goal on the penalty, everything played in their favor. They're really good at possession, even though if like the total minutes don't suggest, you know, total minutes of possession don't suggest the dominance that there was. Look at the expected goals. Is 0.3 was there France's expected goal total there. They didn't have a shot on goal until the 82nd minute. You know, they had some flurries late as they were starting to get a little desperate. Mbappe had a free kick from pretty close range and just, you know, skied it over the crossbar late in that game. And it's just that was kind of for me like, okay, it's over at that point in time. But Spain really, I thought it was a command performance by Spain. I think they're really good at keep away. They're really good at taking you out of what you want to do. The second goal was a thing of beauty right after the half, you know, 10 minutes after the half. And I think after that, it was just like France looked and felt defeated. And it really kind of came across that way. Keep in mind, this isn't a fluke. Spain was the betting favorite coming into the tournament. I think France became the favorite a little bit more by how they looked going on, but Spain might have been challenged more. You know, they had to play Portugal in the round of 16, for crying out loud. Easily the best opponent that either of the two teams had faced, and they were able to take care of business there. You know, their coach, Luis de la Fuente, has only lost once in the 50 games that he's coached. They beat France last year in the Euros, or 2 years ago in the Euros. They're just an elite team. They're now -156 at DraftKings to win the World Cup. England is 3-1, Argentina 4-1. Strongly implies that Spain will be comfortably favored over the winner of this game this afternoon. So I'm just impressed by Spain.
Again, we'll have Patrick Maher stopping by the show in just a little bit for a full preview of England-Argentina. We are just under 2 hours away from that game starting up. England a -120 favorite, Argentina even money over at the DraftKings Sportsbook. So, Jeff, I think we officially declared the Home Run Derby a success on Monday night. We saw an immense amount of pageantry during the MLB All-Star Game last night. I was watching it, you know, with my wife, and she's like, what is going on? Do they do this at every game? And I'm like, no, this is not normal. There are not performances. No. There are not potentially animatronic Ray Charles performing between every inning of every Major League Baseball game. But in general, I didn't mind it, Jeff, because it was a pretty boring game on the field. So it really, I think the star of the night was more so, you know, all of these kind of sideshows that Philadelphia was rolling out. American League ends up winning the game 4-0. We had our first complete shutout in the All-Star game in 13 years. Cody Bellinger took home the MVP basically because he had a couple RBIs on a single off of Christopher Sanchez. We did get a Miguel Vargas homer later in the game, but overall a pretty nondescript All-Star game. And kind of a reminder, Jeff, that even when you have elite lineups on both sides, I think at the end of the day, elite pitching tends to beat elite hitting.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and this is with a number of the top pitchers in the game not pitching in this game.
Right.
You know, no Cam Schiller, no Jacob Mizorowski, no Shohei. It'd be nice to see Shohei hitting, but you know, I think that might have changed things a little bit there. But there's only one extra base hit the entire game, that Miguel Vargas homer. It's just really, yeah, you're right. Pitchers are wizards, as our friend Joe Sheehan likes to write all the time. And I think this came to the forefront a little bit there. To me, the biggest storyline was, please, Junior Caminero, be okay. That to me, it was like the only concern I had coming out of this game. X-rays were negative on him getting hit on the hand with that fastball. We'll see what happens in the ensuing day. Sometimes it's the day after you find things, after swelling goes down a little bit there. Crossing our fingers, the Rays have a big four-game series against the Red Sox coming out of the break, including a doubleheader on Friday.
We'll talk about some midseason MLB awards to potentially target in just a moment. But folks, do you want to bet smarter? Then you need all the tools we offer over at RotoWire. Our brand new Smart Money tool shows you exactly where the sharp action is moving, so you're always on the right side of the line. And that's just the start. RotoWire's award-winning staff gives you rankings, projections, real-time injury updates, and data-driven insights across every sport every day. Whether you're handicapping games, crushing your fantasy leagues, or both, RotoWire has you covered. Head to rotowire.com right now. Use our promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Put that in at checkout when you sign up. It'll get you 15% off instantly any subscription package we offer. Again, that's rotowire.com, promo code VSIN. So while we have a couple of days of calm here in the MLB schedule, Jeff, I think it's a good time to check in on the futures market, some of the major awards, see if there are some buying opportunities. So let's start with MVP. We'll start in the American League, where we have Yordan Alvarez as a pretty sizable favorite, minus 165 at DraftKings. Junior Caminero, who you mentioned, we did not see any change in his MVP odds after last night. He is plus 450. Bobby Witt hanging around at 5-1. Then you get into kind of that next tier, Ben Rice, Nick Kurtz, 13 and 15-1, respectively.
Yeah, and I think that just looking at those odds gives you an idea of how quickly things can change. This is all AKA the Aaron Judge Award. And now we don't even know when we're going to get Judge back, set for imaging this week to see check status on his rib injury there. I think it's a good time in all these awards to kind of look for some underdogs, look for some things, good prices, because we still have almost 3 months of baseball left and a lot can change in that time. I think the Bobby Witt odds look pretty good at 5-1. He was previously a pretty heavy favorite once Judge went down, and Yordan Alvarez has taken off, and we'll see what happens there. I mean, Alvarez could just win going away if he stays healthy, but still, one of the contenders, Nick Kurtz, is on the IL right now. We'll see how quickly he can come back. So yeah, I think there's it's pretty wide open here. I do like putting a little sprinkle on Bobby Witt at this point.
I don't think we need to spend too much time on NL MVP. This is basically, does Shohei Ohtani get hurt or not? There's not much else to say. He is minus 1,000 right now at the DraftKings Sportsbook. So let's move on to Cy Young, where things are a little bit more competitive, particularly in the American League, where we have a two-man race at the top. Cam Schlittler plus 120, Dylan Cease plus 145, Drew Rasmussen still in it at 11-1, Joe Ryan's 22-1, Jacob DeGrom 25-1.
Yeah, notably missing Tarik Skubal. I think that's the one that kind of caught my eyes. Like, hey, where is the going away favorite to start the season? I don't think it's over for him. I think there's still a chance there. Now, obviously, he gets dealt to a National League team. That changes things a little bit there. But, his price is, way low at this point in time. And in some books, it's a little even off the boards at this point in time. But I think that's someone you would kind of take a look at there. I'm looking at like 66-1 at BetMGM right now. There's 2.5 months left in the season. Is it out of the question that he catches fire in the second half of the season, leads the Tigers to this miraculous comeback to make the playoffs? I could see that happening as a narrative there.
Would you bet anybody but Mizorowski right now in the National League? And look, if you're betting Mizorowski, you're laying minus 450. So I wouldn't necessarily advise that either. But not too long ago, Jeff, this was a four or even five-man race where I think you could have made a strong case for just about any of those guys. Miz has pulled away from the field. Could still get Christopher Sanchez at around 6-1. Chris Sale, Zach Wheeler, 22-1. Your guy, Chase Burns, 28-1. And Paul Skeens, who was still favored to win this award, a month and a half ago, all the way up now to 35-1.
Yeah, exactly. It's wild to see that change there. I think that Yoshi Yamamoto is a little overlooked here. A little bit overlooked. It would take a lot of things for it to change because he gets fewer starts than most. You get him at like 45-1 at MGM right now. Opening odds where he was in the top, he was one of the top favorites there, and he's done nothing wrong all season long. I think that's the thing that's pretty wild about this year. Mizorowski is obviously deserved the spot that he has, but he had arm fatigue going into, had his last start skipped. It's not hard to envision a scenario there where he might drop down in the race there. So I think there's a ton of great pitching in the National League for things to change.
Before we bring on our friend Len Hochberg for a full preview of the Open, Jeff, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the blockbuster trade that went down in Major League Baseball this morning. I need a quick reaction to Lance McCullers landing with the Milwaukee Brewers.
I think this is a reflection that the Brewers just need arms to get through this stretch of the season. We mentioned Mizorowski missing a start last time out. Brandon Woodruff is on the 60-day IL. Kyle Harrison just went on the IL too as well. And now, he's been one of the great stories for the Brewers, but who knows? He's got that left forearm tightness that could lead to a lot of different things. So McCullers, he was available pretty cheaply. He could be an innings eater down the stretch there. He's had major, major injuries in the past, but hey, the Brewers are good at spotting that undervalued talent. So it could work.
Not too late to get some plays in for the Open. We're going to have Len Hochberg, our senior golf writer from RotoWire, joining us next. We'll get some picks. We'll get some DFS plays as well. You're watching Prop Points. You're on VSiN.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Joining us now in the Progressive Guest Line is our good friend Len Hochberg, RotoWire senior golf writer. Follow him on Twitter at Len Hochberg. He is a three-time winner of the FSWA DFS Writer of the Year Award. He writes a lot of our great golf content over at RotoWire.com. Len, good morning. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, guys. Great to be here. Thank you.
Let's start off in previewing the Open Championships by talking about the course itself, Royal Birkdale. Towards the top end of the Rota in terms of reputation, number of times we play there. It's a well-regarded course. It might not be playing as hard as it has in previous years, and that's because of the weather. Please explain.
I don't know about that. I don't know if it's not going to play hard. It might play hard for different reasons. It is one of the probably the narrowest fairways in the Open Rota, and the fairways are narrow. They are lined by dense vegetation normally. The greens are small, unlike at, say, St. Andrews, where you can putt from 100 feet away. These greens are in the 5,200 average square foot range. So not traditional in some respects. But the weather this week, we've all heard, or many of us have heard, about this incredible heat wave that's been going through Europe. And everything is dried out. When we last saw Birkdale in 2017, it was rainy, it was windy, it was chilly. That's not the case this week. There might be some wind, but the course is brown. The vegetation is not as thick and as lush. And when you miss the fairway now, the ball could roll through the vegetation, not even really vegetation at this point. And guys are having a really hard time over there in the practice sessions, figuring out distances of clubs and where to hit their ball and where to land their ball, because it's just rolling forever. So I think there are different challenges this week. The over-under is 12.5. That could go either way. I don't think it's going to deviate too far from that.
So, Len, how do we use that information if we are looking for some DFS plays, looking for some bets for the Open? Is there a certain type of golfer, any stats that you're looking for that you think correlate best this week? Or maybe we're just looking at, you know, risk avoidance more than anything else. So who are some of the first names who come to mind for you?
You know, originally in my planning, you know, looking at narrow fairways, small greens, that tells me ball strikers. And you don't normally think necessarily ball strikers at Open Championship courses. But I think because of all the unknowns here, guys who have more imagination, guys who have really good with wedge in hand, I think that's going to elevate a little bit from my original articles from the power rankings and the DraftKings preview. Good scramblers. I think these guys are just going to have an imagination around there. Some names that come to mind: Fleetwood, Fitzpatrick, Rose, Patrick Reed. Patrick Reed always can handle these situations where it's just not a bomber's paradise, where you really have to think your way around a golf course.
The betting odds are a little bit different than recent majors. Scotty is still the favorite, but not the prohibitive favorite that we've seen even as recently as a couple weeks ago, where he was like 4.5 to 1. It's now priced a little bit more fairly after he missed the cut at the Scottish Open.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just been trending that way. And even, you know, he is the defending champion here. So, you know, let's not lose sight of that, even though he's not playing great this year. And great by his standards. And he's playing great by everyone else's standards. So, yeah, he's a real conundrum this week. I don't have him to win. I don't have him in my DraftKings article. That doesn't mean I don't think he's going to finish in the top 10 and be there on Sunday. You know, really one of the best scramblers around. I should have mentioned him in there with the other guys because he really is good at that as well. We think of him as just this incredible iron player, this machine-like iron player, but he really does everything well. And I always like to say, will a guy get major minutes on TV on Sunday? I think Scottie Scheffler will get some TV time on Sunday.
Just a reminder that the VSiN NFL betting guide is out now. Whether you're betting futures, win totals, division races, MVP, rookie of the year, Super Bowl odds, whatever it may be, our guide helps you get ahead of the market before training camps begin. Inside this year's guide, you'll find breakdowns of all 32 teams, projected win totals, best bets from all your favorite VSiN experts, plus futures analysis, power ratings, and more. You can get it today as part of our football special for just $175. The sooner you sign up, the more value you get with full access to everything we do at VSiN across every sport all the way through the Super Bowl. So that includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Take advantage of that football special, just $175, full access all the way through the Super Bowl. We have our friend Len Hochberg, our golf betting and DFS expert from RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Let's get into it a little bit, Len. You have a great piece that you do each and every week, your favorite DraftKings values. You give out some betting advice in that piece as well. You can find that at rotowire.com. So if you're not necessarily fully in on Scottie Scheffler this week, who are the big dogs? Who are we paying up for in DFS?
Yeah, and it's really interesting with the pricing this week because we do go into the 5,000s. 120 guys are in the 6,000. More than 120 guys are in the 6,000s and 5,000s. Only 27 guys, 7,000 and up. So it is really, really skewed. And so you can pay up for guys, two, maybe even three, maybe not in the 10,000s, but a 10 and a couple of nines maybe, or a 10, 9, 8. The guys in the 10,000s that stand out for me, Rory McIlroy, yes, he still has only one Open Championship. Amazing he has. Now has more green jackets than claret jugs. But he is in the mix almost every year. In the 12 years since he has won the Open Championship, he's been in the top seven six times, including last year. I think this type of course, this type of links course where the weather can change, the wind can change from day to day, I think this really plays into his hands. And Matt Fitzpatrick is having an incredible season. He had never played well at the Open before. There's a lot of pressure on Brits to play well in this tournament. And sometimes, you know, we think they have an advantage, but sometimes it works the other way, the pressure involved. But last year, he finally broke through. He tied for fourth. Now he's having his best season ever. Talked earlier about whether it's going to be a ball striker's course or maybe bring scrambling into play a little bit more. Well, Matt Fitzpatrick leads the tour in both of those metrics, strokes gained approach and strokes gained around the green. I like him a lot this week. I think a lot of people do.
Justin Rose was at top form earlier in the season. We haven't heard as much from him lately, but he hasn't gone away either. Do you like him as a medium horse? For, you know, a middle round, like a kind of a mid-tier outright pick?
Yeah, you know, I think I could see him getting major TV minutes on Sunday. He's incredible. He's going to be 46, but before the end of the month. And, you know, not all these guys show up for all the tournaments every year. And, you know, they do try and play well. It's not like they're not trying. But I think Justin Rose, at this point in his career, knows that there are four or five big tournaments or maybe six or seven come back in Europe in the fall that you really have to focus on. And I think he's done a great job at that. Third at the Masters, 10th at the PGA, 11th at the U.S. Open. He's just been spectacular. There's only been three guys who finished in the top 20 in the last four majors going back to last year's Open Championship. Justin Rose is one, Scottie Scheffler is another, and Xander Schauffele is the third. He really knows how to play in the big moments.
Got a couple minutes left, Len. Let's get into some of those bargain plays. And like you said, perhaps more of those than usual, especially in a major field. But if you're trying to pick your way through all these players priced in the 6,000s, who are some names you came to mind first?
There are so many guys in the 6,000s. And I think that, you know, we look at some of them, like I like Hideki Matsuyama. I like Maverick McNealy. You say, well, these guys are in the 6,000s. They're going to be heavily owned. No, there's so many guys. Siwoo Kim, Minwoo Lee, Tom Kim, who's going to be very, very popular now and for good reason. So I don't think there's going to be anyone really there. But Hideki Matsuyama, he's just a cut machine, and that's what you want from the 6,000s and lower. And he has the potential to really to score very well and have a high finish. But he's made 48 of 54 cuts in his career. I haven't done the research of every guy, but I'm pretty sure over the last 15 years, nobody can match that. Maverick McNealy, very, very quietly, 23rd at last year's Open, top 20 at the Masters and the PGA. These are guys who could fill out your lineup. Nikolai Højgaard at 6,600, really having his best season, finally maturing. Still only 25, but at 25, he's been around. This has played 16 majors now. He's really starting to get the hang of it. Played well at the Open Championship last year. Like those three guys in the 6,000s, there are a lot of guys to go around.
Awesome stuff, as always, from our guy, Len Hochberg, one of the best golf analysts in the business. You can find all of his work each and every week, each and every tournament over at rotowire.com. Check out his DraftKings value plays. Check out his power rankings for the Open as well. We're going to switch the conversation over to the World Cup when we come back. Patrick Maher stopping by for a full England-Argentina preview. Prop points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson, Nick Whalen from RotoWire here. Joining us again in advance of the upcoming semifinal game between England and Argentina, we get our friend Patrick Maher, host of VSiN Live, Mad Dog Sports Radio, at The Wrap Radio on Twitter. Patrick, welcome. How you doing, my friend?
Jeff, Nick, boys, I got to get a winner on your show. But one thing I do think that we know after the last two nights of trying to find an edge in a home run derby and whatever the hell that was last night, though it did tick up to 8.5 on the total, so the undercashed, we've been blessed over the last 40 days or whatever it is with the World Cup. Games every single day, ratings off the charts, and something to bet on. And I'm looking forward to England-Argentina today, boys.
Absolutely. Can't wait. To that end, do you think we'll see a lot of scoring in this game? It was one-sided yesterday. Spain just throttled France, just didn't let them do anything. is a little bit more wide open today between England and Argentina.
Which is funny because you can, Jeff, right now, you can find twos in the market. Twos lay $1.35. You know, you're getting a good plus price to go over the 2.5. I've had experts on VSiN Live on Mad Dog Sports Radio all week, whether it be U.S. men's national team players from the past, Felica, Jeff, you and I were talking about that. They're all expecting goals, and as am I. Now, I'll be careful here, and I'll just give it away. I'm going to go both teams to score minus $1.10 in the 90. If we get to 1-1, by the time we get to extras, you do cash that. But listen, England's conceded. These are two sides that prefer to dictate play, control tempo. You know, Egypt scored two on Argentina. Cape Verde scored a couple on Argentina. England conceded the first goal to Norway. Congo scored on England. Like, I have a hard time believing that these defenses are going to stop one another. So wouldn't shock me, obviously, if we saw something 1-1 going into extras. Both teams to score would be good there. But I, unlike yesterday where I had that a dead nut under and Spain, that was a masterclass, boys. I expect goals today. I expect the controlled environment of Atlanta, where you're going to see an increase in XG for both teams in that controlled environment. I expect goals today.
I think we're going to have to force you to make a pick on this game at some point in the next 8 minutes, Patrick, before we let you go. But I will first phrase it to you like this. If you are Spain, who are you rooting for today? Who would you rather face in the final?
Nick, it's a great question. Here's the thing. I liked France, like most, but in sports betting, sometimes it just comes down to price. And when you looked at the three-way, the 90 yesterday, this is for new bettors, and you saw a plus 210 on, you know, it's a 55-45 game. Maybe you had France with the attack. But what you saw was at that price, you had to bet Spain because international play is all about the system. It was a technically brilliant game by Spain. And to answer your question moving forward, I just think the all-around technical brilliance of Spain bring England. Sorry to Alex Blowers, our expert over at VSiN.com, who's from the UK. Or bring Argentina, who is the oldest left as far as the semifinals team and have been susceptible on the back line. I just think that system, they've conceded one goal, Spain, now, and France really never looked hungry like they were going to score. You showed the odds there. Spain's $1.50 to win the World Cup. They're going to be favored against England, Argentina, Nick. I have a hard time seeing either of these teams beating Spain.
Patrick, you may not have heard this because, you know, the coverage has been scant on this issue, but Leo Messi's never faced England before. You know, just thought I might break that to you there. But weird, strange, I know. But what sort of adjustments will England make for him? What sort of things can they do? Knowing that he doesn't come back on defense, do they attack that side of the field a little bit more often? What adjustments are made?
How do you spell Messi? Trying to figure this one out.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So, in 2002 at 35, and remember, Messi hadn't had tremendous World Cups leading up to 02 when he's 35. That was being discussed like it was his swan song. He has been, we've got the golden boot, also golden ball. He has been the best player in the tournament. It's not just the 8 goals and 2 assists, but 7 big chances created more than anybody in the tournament. And I think, again, I don't want to pick on England too much, but I do think because of the travel as well, they've traveled over 14,000 miles. Does it start to add up? I did not think, like Thomas Tuchel, that England was good the last time out against Norway. I thought they just had more quality. And I do think on those wings, I think Messi's going to be able to break them down. Messi has been fascinating in this tournament, Jeff, because he's doing things that are just he doesn't generally do. Like we saw in Egypt with 9 minutes to go, he just said, all right, I'm just going to put on a dribbling masterclass and just like take over from different spots. That goal that he scored off the bounce, that's not normal. So when you handicap this game, you're talking about like the star-studded generation of Bellingham and Kane and others, Declan Rice, England. against literally the greatest of all time. Hate to be so basic with it, but Messi is, he is a difference maker, because you also saw him celebrate, Nick, as well. I know you're ready to go. You saw him celebrate with that goal against Egypt. I've never in 25 years seen him celebrate like that, which means this is just, he knows what it means.
Well, to that end, I mean, which player has the most to gain from winning the World Cup? Like you said, I think we've pretty much accepted, I wouldn't say universally, but, you know, especially with how things went in 22, that Lionel Messi at the very least is, you know, your consensus modern greatest of all time. I don't know if winning another World Cup, maybe that officially hammers it home, but is there a player on Spain, or is there a player on England where winning the World Cup completely changes how we'll talk about that guy going forward?
It's a great question. Pele won three. So Messi getting two. Messi, because of the longevity, I believe, is going to be, with time, thought of as the greatest of all time. Maradona, his fellow countrymen, he loved Coke and booze. Sorry, family show. It's factual. Look it up. He's admitted it. So his career was cut short. Pele's career was cut short. Came over to the United States. Ronaldo and Messi have become the question. And with all the Ronaldo riders, no offense, it's not a conversation. So number two would put Messi in rarefied air. He's still going to be the GOAT. I'll give you an answer. It's Jude Bellingham. He's 23. He's playing with now England's greatest ever. Ask blowers. Ask anybody from the UK. But again, they haven't won one since 66. They act like they won the last three. It's all good. Bellingham, who's 23, if he continues to ascend here, by the time it's done, he's going to be the greatest of all time from England. And that's a pretty rich class. So Bellingham would be my answer.
And to think there were some pundits in England that don't like Bellingham, didn't want him starting.
I know.
Starting 11. Insane, the dialogue in him. I mean, just look what he did in 4 years ago at age 19 in the World Cup. Look what he's done at the club level. It's insane to even think that it's a question. But because he's been their best player, and it hasn't even been close.
He has, in fact, the golden ball, best player, you know, tournament wise, I think it's Messi and Bellingham. He has been their best player, you know, poaching goals. People say, oh, he poached the goal. It's like, no, you got to be in the right place at the right time. Bellingham has shown a toughness. I loved his answer when Tuchel was like, we weren't good in the game. He's like, I don't care what that dude says. He's German. Like Thomas Tuchel. This is. And by the way, I think you both would agree, England still has, after the row with the Nordics, I think England with the Wonderwall and Oasis, best celebration once it's over. No?
I think so. I'm not a huge Oasis guy. I'm also not super familiar with like what, you know, what the niche countries are doing. I think Norway clearly takes the cake with the row.
They take the cake, and Erling Haaland, all kidding aside, like, think of a bigger breakout star. I think he's a bigger star in America, yes, the Norwegian, than he is in Norway. It has been awesome. You know, I joked when I joined you guys talking about the home run derby. Baseball's in a weird spot. And what we've gotten over, Nick, you're not even a big soccer fan. You've gotten into it. Like, the casuals have gotten into the last 40 days. There's going to be a hangover after, what is it, Sunday in Jersey and that dump in the Meadowlands when the finals are played.
Indeed. All right, Patrick. So before we let you go, we got about a minute left. Can we get an official pick? Who's winning between England and Argentina? We know you have both teams to score in pocket, but who's moving on to face Spain in the final?
I'll give you two. Anthony Gordon, 4.5 to score on the wing. The backs there, right and left, not great for Argentina. I think Anthony Gordon, the Barcelona kid, could score. And then to answer your question directly, yesterday I thought Spain plus 210 in 90 was just a ridiculous price. Let's be fair. Argentina has won 13 straight defending champs. You're getting them 2-1 in 90. Sorry, blowers. Sorry to the queen and king, RIP. 2-1 on Argentina to win it outright, 90. Crazy. It's just a crazy price. I'll take that.
There you have it. Patrick, as amazing as always, thank you for joining us. We got to do this more often. We got to find another World Cup. We got to get you on during football season. We got to talk a lot
Let's
more
sing
often.
Let's sing it.
Because this is great every
on
time.
On the way out.
Friend. Thanks for joining
us. And maybe I'm going to beat Nick. Let's go. You're Liam Gallagher. Be the one to save me.
You're going to be the one that saves me. You know, I I'm not an Oasis guy.
That's
Patrick. Awesome stuff, as always. We'll bring you back to talk some Detroit Pistons Summer League next week after the World Cup calms down. Talking some NFL divisional futures when we come back. This is Prop Points on VSiN.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football season is right around the corner, and DraftKings is bringing you their biggest best ball contest ever. We're talking a massive $20 million in total prizes, making this the largest best ball tournament in DraftKings history. And this year, not just one, but three players will walk away as millionaires. And right now, our partners at DraftKings are giving all customers a can't-miss offer. Draft one, get one. Enter a lineup in the $20 million best ball contest for just $25, and you'll receive a bonus best ball ticket to play again free for a share of $20 million, giving you a second shot to be crowned a millionaire. It's simple. Just draft your team once, no weekly management required, and let your top scorers automatically start each week. All season long, every breakout star, every clutch play, every touchdown counts towards your shot at a share of $20 million. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app and enter a lineup in the $20 million best ball contest for just $25 to get a bonus ticket to play free for another shot to win big. That's two shots without ever setting your lineups again in DraftKings' biggest best ball contest ever. Draft one, get one, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours in partnership with DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. 18 plus in most states. Restrictions apply. One per customer. Enter the Best Ball 20 Million Headliner Contest to get one bonus entry. $25 entry fee required. Reward expires at contest lock on September 9th, 2026. See terms at DraftKings.com/promotions. Sponsored by DraftKings. Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you, bringing you up to the top of the hour. Money Moves, of course, coming up next here on the Sports Betting Network. Jeff, we continue to work our way through some NFL divisional futures. And look, I think on yesterday's show, we shortchanged the NFC North a little bit. We were running short on time. I think we both agree this might be the best division in football from top to bottom in terms of the competitiveness of all four teams. I think you could sell me on the Minnesota Vikings winning this division at just north of 5-1. You could certainly sell me on Detroit. We know about Green Bay and Chicago. You know, I do want to go a little bit deeper on the Bears because, you know, it feels like every year in the NFL, there's the overachieving team, the team that catches a lot of breaks along the way. I think 2 years ago, it was Washington. Last year, it was pretty clearly the Chicago Bears, but we know how much talent is on this roster. We know how well coached the Chicago Bears are. The schedule works against them a bit more in 2026 than it did last season. You do wonder if some of those luck metrics come back around. But what I want to ask you is, are the Bears as obvious of a regression candidate as they seem to be nationally?
I think there are some things that point in their favor as well. Continued improvement of Caleb Williams, especially. I want to see whether his accuracy on mid-tier routes improves. And I think he's been great on deep balls. I think that, you know, when he pulls it down the scramble, it's been great. Can exploit the middle of the field a little bit better this year. How do they react to Drew Dolman being out? They have two options there at center now. I think that's a big thing. Dolman surprisingly retiring. At least he did it before the draft, before free agency, so the Bears could react, unlike Frank Ragnow last year with the Lions when he retired in June. But the defense is going to be a real problem for this team. I think that's the part that gets a little overlooked. I don't think they have a pass rush. I think that is going to be a problem, especially in a division where they have so many prolific offenses they're going up against.
I think this is going to look a lot like last year, where all four teams could very well be in it heading into week 17, yep. Week 18. We kind of forget, like, if Minnesota had just been like 5% more competent offensively, they had a chance to sneak their way into the wild card mix with the way Green Bay finished the season. I think we're looking at a minimum of probably 7 or 8 wins for the fourth place team in this division. And I wouldn't be surprised if you need to get to 11, 12, maybe even 13 to win it. So my money's still on Detroit as the favorite. I think plus 180 is a reasonable value given the upside of that offense, given the schedule that they face this year. But man, it's going to be a brutal, brutal division in the NFC North. Maybe not the case, Jeff, in the NFC South. This has become the refrain for this division over the last few years. I think they've taken the mantle from the AFC South, where we've seen Jacksonville and Houston at least emerge as real contenders. I have absolutely no idea what to expect out of the NFC South this year. I'm not a big Carolina guy. I still think Tampa Bay, to me, is probably the highest floor team in this division, but you have to be really concerned with how that team took a nosedive over the second half of last year. I think the trendy team now, Jeff, to come out of the NFC South to win that division, I think it's the New Orleans Saints. Are you buying in on New Orleans, who kind of had the opposite season of Tampa Bay, where they get off to a terrible start, they make a quarterback change, and look like a completely different team down the stretch?
Yeah, this division, first of all, tightest spread in the NFL of all eight divisions. Even the worst betting team is the Falcons at plus 425. I like the Saints, too. I see the reason for optimism there with Tyler Shuck, really what he did in the second half of the season, and I thought he got better and better. I like the addition of Travis Etienne. I want to say Etienne, but it's Etienne now.
Good catch.
Thank you. Full season with Chris Olave. I want to check status on Chris Olave. He had a procedure to remove a blood clot from his lung in January. Supposed to be ready for the start of the season. Also hoping for a new contract. You know, we never see a wide receiver needing a new contract before training camp going sideways. So should be totally fine. But, you know, just watch that one just a little bit closely there. But I am comfortable saying I like New Orleans. I think the Bucs are properly favored, but at the same time, there's a lot of uncertainty with them. New year without no Mike Evans, a brand new offensive coaching staff. Usually when you fire all the assistants, all the coordinators on one side of the ball, it's like the last step before the head coach loses his job. Big year for Todd Bowles.
Can I interest you at all, Jeff, in an MVP long shot on Baker Mayfield at 55-1? Now that seems a little wild given how the Buccaneers mm-hmm. finished the season. But if I could take you back to, I think it was week 7 leading into week 8, if you go back and look at the MVP odds at that point, it was basically a two-man race between Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield, the way the Buccaneers opened the season. I'm not necessarily subscribing to the belief that Tampa Bay is going to pick up where they left off. I think it has to look better than it did over the final 8 games. Baker was banged up. Emeka Ebuka was playing through a hamstring. Mike Evans was in and out. The defense completely cratered. Maybe they don't look quite as good as they did early in the season, but I think if Tampa Bay, you know, they check a lot of boxes for me, what you're looking for in an MVP candidate. I think they can win the division. I think they could conceivably get to 10, 11 wins. That alone is just going to put Baker Mayfield in the conversation. And look, the way Baker Mayfield plays, I think helps him out. You know, you think of all the game-winning drives, the last-second scores at the end of those games over the first half of the season. If he can recapture that, I think 55-1 is one of the better values on the board, as unlikely as it may be that he actually wins the award.
I can buy into that. And keep in mind, when we're evaluating what happened with the Bucs last year, don't forget about the offensive line. Always. I like to point these things out. Tristan Wirfs wasn't ready for the start of the season, then subsequently missed later games deeper into the season. Graham Barton, their center, had to go play left tackle for a while. Take away a team center, you know that's a problem. You know I harp on that a lot. Cody Mauch also got hurt last year. Luke Goedeke was also hurt. They had a lot of issues on their offensive line, and I think that was one of the reasons why that offense fell apart in the second half of the season. I think there's you can intrigue me on that 55-1. And while we're at it, let's take a look at Emeka Ebuka a little bit closer here too. You mentioned he was dealing with the hamstring in the second half of the season. Mike Evans is gone now too. Ebuka is going to be the man. And I think people got to realize that he is going to be the number one target on this team. The fantasy community is already there, as always. They're usually ahead of the curve there a little bit. He's already up to wide receiver 14 in the NFFC, pick 29 overall. Yet his receiving prop for receiving yards is 899.5. I love the over on that one.
That was one of my plays in the VSiN NFL betting guide, which, of course, you can get as a VSiN Pro subscriber. And the number's actually up, Jeff, as you would expect. It's risen as his ADP has risen. I got it at 874.5. I love it still at 899.5. Like, if you just run the numbers, he doesn't have to be, you know, this elite player that he was over the first 7 or 8 weeks of the season. And even then, it was relatively low target volume. It was a lot of big plays. I think that volume will be there this year. And you know, if Emeka Ebuka plays somewhere between how we did in the first half versus the second half, he could conceivably go over this number in like 14 games, right? Like, I don't think this is one that you look at and say he has to stay completely healthy, which is something you have to consider with those season-long futures. So could not agree more, over 899.5 on Emeka Ebuka. Let's round out the show, Jeff, as we look forward to England-Argentina with our best bets of the night. We'll give you some plays for the Open. What else we got?
All right, so that Emeka Buka prop is my official best bet, over 899.5 at minus 110 at DK. I also like Matt Fitzpatrick, top 20 at the Open. He's been top 25 in all three majors. He's having a tremendous season. He was third last week in the Scottish Open. Get it at plus 350 over at Bet Rivers.
I'm going to give you Xander Schauffele, top 10 at the Open. You can grab that plus 210 over at DraftKings. And we got to get something on the board for NBA Summer League. The Boston Celtics to cover 2.5 tonight against the Sacramento Kings, minus 112 at FanDuel. It's a back-to-back for Sacramento. We're starting to see some guys get shut down. I think that could be coming for some of these Kings players. So give me Boston to cover the 2.5. Money Moves with Stormy Bonatoni and Jonathan Von Tobel is coming your way next. Kelly Bidlin is going to stop by with some open plays. Our guy Andy Sridhar is going to give you some picks for the World Cup. They will take you into England, Argentina. Keep it locked. You're watching VSiN.